previously on Unsolved.
There was no gray area with Father Kuntz, which is what I needed from a Catholic priest. There was so much corruption within the hierarchy that he was having trouble having any faith in following proper procedure.
You know, here on the surface, you think you have, oh, what a bunch of holy men. And then underneath the surface, you have a lot of dirty things going on. And that added another element of intrigue to the Father Kuntz murder investigation.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved, Season 3, The Devil You Know. I'm Gina Barton. From the day Father Alfred Kuntz's body was found, some people were saying his murder must be tied to Satanism.
There was false rumors going around that there was body mutilation and all these other things that people attributed to it being of a demonic experience.
You know, there have been a lot of rumors about people saying that, you know, Father Kuntz was found with his finger cut off, with certain other mutilations that are, I kind of hesitate to say.
There was no evidence of satanic cults operating in Wisconsin at that time, or any time since that I'm aware of. It's a rumor that comes up fairly often. The Michelle Manders case from season 2 also had people talking about devil worship. But I've never heard of a homicide that was proven to be tied to Satanism. In one of the first news reports I found about the case, the law enforcement types were already trying to set the record straight.
The coroner has yet to perform an autopsy on the body, but Deputy Coroner John Stanley says there are no signs any bizarre cult or ritual acts were involved in the murder.
So right away, the authorities were trying to dispel these rumors. But they didn't have a lot of luck. There were a couple of reasons for that. For one thing, there were some very outspoken traditionalist religious leaders who just wouldn't let it go. And then there was the fact that Father Kuntz himself had spoken publicly, more than once, about his battles with Satan. Peter Kelly, who co-hosted a radio show with Father Kuntz, tells me Father Kuntz truly believed Satan was present in the world. Kelly believes it too. A lot of Catholics do. They believe demonic possession can happen, and exorcism is the remedy. More than one person told me Father Kuntz had trained to perform exorcisms with some priests and bishops who operated outside mainstream Catholicism. Those same fringe figures were quick to blame Satan and his evil minions for Father Kuntz's death. Anyway, Peter Kelly told me he never talked with Father Kuntz about exorcism, per se. But the two of them did talk about an experience Father Kuntz said he had with a possessed person.
This was back when he was working at the Chancery Office downtown in Madison. In his office there, in the Chancery Office, there was a crucifix on the wall, but when you opened the door, it would cover the crucifix. And a woman came in who was very distressed and was very troubled, and Father Kuntz told me about the time that she was just very, very angry because she knew it was around summer, but she couldn't find the crucifix. And it really disturbed her.
Now, Peter Kelly wasn't at St. Michael the day Father Kuntz preached about this experience. But one of the parishioners who was there, a man named Toby Westerman, wrote up an account of it that I found online. He didn't return my phone calls, so I asked a narrator from our newsroom to read parts of it for you, picking up where Kelly left off.
After she sat down, a deep animal-like growl emanated from her, followed by the words, "Where is he?" The woman had been drawn into satanic rituals, found them revolting, and wanted to be freed from the unwanted spirit within her. The demonic voice, however, caused the chancery staff to flee, and Father Kuntz was ordered to remove the woman from the premises. Despite this eviction, Father Kuntz was soon able to assist the woman in obtaining her freedom. She remains in the Midwest, leading a normal life.
By now you're probably thinking, what? Demonic possession? Exorcisms? I mean, I was pretty skeptical when I heard this too. I was raised in the Catholic Church, but still, The only place I ever heard about exorcisms was in the movies. So I started doing some research, and I talked about this with Matt Abbott, the Catholic commentator who has done a lot of writing about Father Kuntz. He said that, yes, almost every big diocese does have an exorcist assigned to it. And he recommended that I talk with the one in Chicago, whose name is Father Jeffrey Grob. As it turns out, Father Grob was happy to talk about exorcism, and not just to me. This past fall, I went with my mom to hear him speak at a church outside Chicago, St. Catherine of Labouré. According to a survey he talked about, I'm not the only one who has some doubts about the whole Satan thing.
Among adults of all denominations, 69% believe the devil in the sense of a symbol, 31% as an actual living being. That's among adults of all denominations. Among Catholics, 83% see him as only a symbol, 17% as a living being.
Father Grob told this church group that's a big problem, because if people let their guard down, they're more vulnerable to the power of evil.
So that sense of the reality that the evil one is real. Would I prefer to be talking about Jesus Christ? Absolutely. Right now, and because of some of the work that I do, I need to be talking about old red legs. But I'd rather be talking about the Lord Jesus, because that's what gives us life.
I was able to spend some time talking with Father Grob on the phone to try to wrap my head around the Catholic beliefs about possession and exorcisms. I felt I needed to do that in order to truly understand Father Kuntz and the people who knew him and what they were saying about his murder. The first thing I wanted to know was, what steps does an exorcist take when someone comes in or calls and says they're possessed?
There is a whole intake process of looking at the individual, you know, and what is it? Could it be a mental health issue? The exorcist is trained fundamentally as a skeptic. You know, the presumption is that there is something natural or organic that's taking place. And so to try and ferret that out, or is there something truly spiritual? I mean, and that's, you know, there are and have been genuine cases of demonic possession.
He explained possession as a relationship between a human being and Satan, whom he calls the evil one. He told me it doesn't happen just randomly, and it doesn't happen all at once.
If there is something truly demonic going on, the evil one needs a hook to hang his hat on, needs some kind of entree. They're out of relationship with God, or they've directly involved, they're actively engaged occult activity, and I mean, in a sense, opening a door, if you will, by that. And oftentimes, there's a deep woundedness within a person. And this can be that entree, that hook, if you will. I mean, if the person is lost in a host of just negative emotions and, you know, and is not getting kind of the restorative or healing that they need. And so in a sense, you're looking for proofs. What's going on a spiritual level?
I asked him what some of those proofs might be.
Classically, the church has used four criteria. The first is the knowledge of language that a person has not studied, you know, I mean, an instantaneous kind of thing. This is an extraordinary sign. Second would be secret knowledge, hidden knowledge. You know, I walk into the room with somebody and they're able to reveal things about me that they just simply wouldn't have access to. The third would be extraordinary strength. Strength that, you know, in a sense is excessive for that individual. You know, I mean, it's one thing for, you know, say Arnold Schwarzenegger in his heyday to, you know, bench press whatever, 250 pounds, whatever the case may be. It's quite another for, you know, an elderly woman throw around large men, you know, like rag dolls kind of thing. Something that's truly extraordinary. And then the fourth is the aversion to the sacred. They've engaged the darkness has engaged them. This relationship is growing. That means that the relationship with God is declining. You know, and so anything that reflects the sacred, you know, sacred objects, sacred images, sacred space, all those kinds of things, the person develops an aversion to them.
We'll have more on exorcisms and on Father Kuntz's experiences with them after the break.
Hi, I'm Allie, and I work with Gina and the Unsolved crew here at the Journal Sentinel. Support for this episode comes from Casper. You spend a third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Casper delivers right to your door. Gina's 10-year-old son helped unwrap the box and he found it pretty amazing.
Oh my gosh, look!
Whoa! That's actually crazy.
You can also be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. If you're not completely satisfied, they offer hassle-free returns. Shipping and returns are free in the U.S. and Canada. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/MJS and using promo code MJS at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. That's casper.com/MJS, promo code MJS.
I'm guessing most of you have heard of the movie The Exorcist, which came out in 1973. A whole bunch of different surveys and websites rank it as the scariest movie of all time. I've got an uncle who would definitely agree with that assessment. When the movie came out, he was about 20, and he's like one of the most macho guys I know. But after he saw that movie, he was so terrified he had to sleep on the floor of my grandparents' bedroom for 3 or 4 days. So for those of you who might not know, it's about this little girl named Reagan who is possessed and the priest who tries to free her from the demon. Some crazy stuff happens in this movie. Reagan talks backwards in a bunch of different voices. She's got scars on her stomach that spell out, "Help me." And in probably the most famous scene of the movie, her head spins around 360 degrees. Of course, I had to ask Father Grob how accurate that movie really is. And I was kind of surprised by his answer.
Well, it's based on a true story. You know, I mean, what they did was, you know, they rolled up a ton of possibilities and kind of created a few of their own and put them all in the person of this little girl, Reagan. But it's the movie. I mean, it certainly, I mean, it's been the face, you know, in the sense of exorcism, if you will, for how many decades now?
Father Grob wouldn't tell me how many exorcisms he's done. But he did say that if the possessed person really wants to be freed, there's no way for an exorcism to fail.
You know, an exorcism is successful as long as a person wants to be liberated. You know, because that's what it all comes down to. You know, this is about a relationship.
Now back to Father Kuntz. He was not an official exorcist by Catholic Church standards. He wasn't like Father Grob, who first served as an apprentice to a more senior Catholic exorcist and then got assigned to do exorcisms as one of his official church duties. By now, you already know Father Kuntz didn't care a whole lot about what church leaders told him to do or not do. So he wasn't sanctioned by the church to do exorcisms. But he learned how to do them anyway, from one of those fringe characters I referenced earlier. The man who took Father Kuntz under his wing to teach him about exorcism was an Irish-born priest and author named Malachi Martin. Malachi Martin was released from his priestly duties in 1965, but there continues to be some debate about how much of a priest he actually still was after that. He moved to the United States, where he focused mostly on writing. His most famous book is a novel called Windswept House, and one of the characters in that book is allegedly based on Father Kuntz's best friend, Father Charles Fiore. Another one of Martin's books is called Hostage to the Devil, which is a series of case studies about exorcisms. In the book, Martin says they're true stories of demonic possession. Here's Matt Abbott, a Catholic commentator who has been writing about Father Kuntz's murder for years.
Malachi Martin is a very, even in traditionalist circles, is a very controversial figure. I know that, you know, he wrote this Windswept House, which is something that apparently Father Kuntz had made reference to. You know, this was kind of part of what was going on behind the scenes, that there was Satanism in the Vatican and so forth. I also heard from someone I know, in fact, who lived in the same building I did in Chicago for many years, that Malachi Martin had made some statement to him to the effect that he believed space aliens or Martians were among us.
After Father Kuntz was murdered, Malachi Martin told reporters that Father Kuntz had done exorcisms. Chuck Nolan, who was a reporter in Madison at the time, remembers speaking with him.
And he was an exorcist and an advisor to Kuntz on exorcisms. And he wrote about exorcisms in some of his books. And he was a character. I liked him a lot just because he was so forthcoming. And so he didn't care. You know what I mean? He didn't measure his words really at all. He was kind of a free spirit. And I remember him insisting that he was absolutely convinced that Father Kuntz was killed by Luciferians, you know, Satanists, who resented, it might have been a connection to the exorcism thing, but Martin said, I am convinced that they killed him because Kuntz wanted someone that the Satanists considered theirs. He was absolutely convinced of it. And he also told me that Kuntz had performed many, many, many exorcisms.
In 1999, Malachi Martin suffered a head injury when he fell in his New York apartment. According to a new Netflix documentary about his life, while he was in the hospital, he told a friend he had been pushed by an unseen hand, a demon angry about his exorcism of a 4-year-old child. Not long after that, he had a stroke and died. Another guy who believed Kuntz was murdered by Satanists was Richard Williamson. At that time, he was a bishop in this group called the Society of St. Pius X. I'll let Matt Abbott, the Catholic commentator, explain a little bit about that group.
So the Society of St. Pius X was, if you will, the main splinter group. That is comprised of traditional Catholics who adhere to essentially everything pre-Vatican II. Essentially, they disregard it. They believe that it was bad for the Church, that it is, in many respects, contradictory to previous councils of the Church. Bishop Williamson, talking about a controversial figure, there is someone who I would consider him a loose cannon, even when he was involved with the Society. And at the time he was, I think there were some who considered him to be a loose cannon. But he is someone who has made some pretty outrageous claims in the past, I know, with even regard to the Holocaust and other matters. So his apparent, I guess, Bishop Williamson's claim was that Father Kuntz's murder was satanic.
Chuck Nolan told me that Father Kuntz and Bishop Williamson knew each other well. And shortly before Father Kuntz's death, Bishop Williamson had referred someone to him for an exorcism.
There had been an exorcism referral to a woman who said her middle-aged, disturbed son, she was convinced, was possessed by the devil. And they got a referral to Father Kuntz. They were to come here. And they had not made it as of a day before the murder.
Wayne Honer, a retired detective who spent years working on the Father Kuntz investigation, told me he had a really odd meeting with Bishop Williamson.
I remember the setting. It was high up on top of a hill. It was kind of a gloomy, weird day. And when we got there, choir boys that were probably 10, 12 years old, very strict as far as their teaching. I mean, they were very, very trained, I guess, is what I'd like to say. But then we did meet with Bishop Williamson, and he was just kind of a strange individual. The setting, the lights were kept real low. There was no lights turned on in the room. It was just kind of gloomy in there. It it smelled dust, musky and just strange. But he went on to talk about different weird theories about what happened, and he made the gesture of taking his finger and drawing it across his neck, and basically saying that he had a thought that chances are Alfred Kuntz was being cut ear to ear.
The fact that Father Kuntz's throat was slit hadn't been released to the public yet, so that was a pretty unsettling thing for Bishop Williamson to say.
I think myself and my partner both kind of edged back away from him a little bit, but we had to ask him where he was, and his reply was that he very rarely leaves this seminary here, and if we needed to have that vouch for, I mean, any one of the 20 or 30 choir boys or altar boys that were in the church could vouch for him that he was never out of the buildings.
Bishop Williamson is 78 now. He's no longer with the Society of St. Pius X. He's now operating a group called the St. Marcel Initiative. And back in 2012, when that group got started, here's what he said about it. God may possibly want a loose network of independent pockets of resistance gathered around the Mass, freely contacting one another, but with no structure of false obedience such as served to sink the mainstream church in the 1960s. In any case, when I reached out to him, his secretary told me, quote, "His Excellency regrets that he has no useful factual information to offer." One specific occurrence made people think Satanism might be behind Father Kuntz's death. That's after the break.
Hi, it's Allie again. Support for this episode comes from Care Of. This year, make health and wellness a top priority with the help of Care Of's personalized monthly subscription vitamin service. Care Of helps you build a vitamin routine that's made just for you and your health goals. Whether you want to boost your energy levels, get more sleep, or just generally stay healthy, you start the process with a fun online quiz about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices. The quiz takes only 5 minutes, and when you're done, you'll get personalized, scientifically backed vitamin and supplement recommendations. For me, the quiz recommended a mix of vitamins that will help me get more sleep and feel energized, and personalized daily packs were delivered right to my door. Take advantage of this month's special New Year offer. For 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter promo code MJS50. That's takecareof.com, promo code MJS50.
There's one other thing that really fueled the idea that Satanists had something to do with Father Kuntz's death. I'll let Chuck Nolan tell you about it.
Almost exactly, almost to the hour, 24 hours before the time frame that the profilers and the sheriff's department had said Kuntz was killed. The previous day's exact time frame, there was a sheriff's call out on Schneider Road that there had been a calf that had been mutilated, you know, and throat slit, and its genitals had been cut off.
Next time on Unsolved. To tell this part of the story, we have to go all the way back to 1949, to the tiny town of Nisida, Wisconsin. At the time, a woman named Mary Ann Van Hoof lived on a farm there with her husband and their kids. She said that in November of 1949, she saw the Blessed Virgin Mary in the doorway of her bedroom. As you can imagine, this caused quite a stir. And a bunch of people have said miracles happened to them while they were praying at the site where the Virgin Mary was said to have appeared. They call it the sacred spot. There's a shrine on the site now.
There's thousands of miracles here. I was going to die, and I came here. They dragged me here on the Feast of St. Joseph, and I took the name Joseph of the Most Blessed Trinity. I'm a Carmelite brother. And right at the sacred spot, I asked for a cure. I'm going to die. And on Feast of St. Joseph, March 19th, I got fixed in 1986.
That's all for this week. To explore the case on your own, visit jsonline.com/unsolved. There's all sorts of cool stuff there, like police reports, photos, maps, and timelines. Unsolved is reported, written, and produced by me, Gina Barton. Our sound engineer and videographer is Bill Schultz. Photographer, Mark Hoffman. Artist, Lou Saldivar. Web designers, Aaron Coy and Andrew Malika. Our editor of local news and investigations is Greg Borowski. Our copy editor is Debbie Davis. Our theme music this season was composed by Evan Johnson. The TV news clips you heard in this episode came from WKOW in Madison. I also want to thank Donna Billmeyer, Miles Moffitt, Ashley Lutheran, Meg Jones, Tom Ketting, Rachel Piper, Emily Risto, Anissa Johnson, Rick Wood, Brian Kranz, Joe Hanneman, Elena Weissman, and Taylor Palmby for their help this season. And please support local journalism. You can subscribe to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at jsonline.com/deal. Thank you.